has me spinning my head, catching my breath, too afraid to slow down. I tell myself
this is Don Letts, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Accra. Stay tuned.
WGXC welcomes audio responses from listeners. Anyone can call and leave a message with WGXC, and we'll play it on the air. Call 518-291-WGXC and leave up to a 3-minute message for airplay. Hear something you disagree with? Want to speak out on an issue? Plug your band's show? Let your neighbors know something important? Call 518-291-9492 and leave a 3-minute message anytime about any issue. That number again is 518-291-WGXC. 518-291-9492.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of the Bridge Street Theater in Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
This is Tom Rowe with the WGXC News Update. Go to the newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. On the 4th of July, there were protests for police reform in Colony, Carmel, and New Paltz, and one against mask wearing in Kingston. The Times Union reports that there were also competing protests on different sides of the street in Del Mar. On one side of the intersection of Delaware and Kenwood Avenues in Del Mar, protesters chanted Black Lives Matter, and on the other side, demonstrators held signs that said, "We support Bethlehem Police." While there was much yelling between the two sides, a few people talked about common ground. Jody Heffernan said she was there for the police rally, but that she, quote, can't pick a side, unquote, as she has many friends who are police and a daughter that is biracial. Heffernan supports the police, but, quote, you're seeing too many videos of officers acting in ways they shouldn't, unquote, she said. Across the street, 16-year-old Sydney Afonso, a Bethlehem High School student, said she, quote, got help from the police, and I'm grateful for that. We're saying the system is corrupt, and black lives need to matter right now. We're trying to get people to care and see what's going on, unquote. This coming week, there are other protests planned in Cairo, Kinderhook, Ghent, Chatham, Kingston, Monticello, and North Adams in Massachusetts. MidHudsonNews.com is reporting that federal authorities have charged Timothy Ammerman, 29, of Saugerties, with civil disorder and conspiracy, alleging he supplied Samantha Shader of Catskill with materials used in the May 30th attempted firebombing of a police vehicle in Brooklyn. Ammerman, a painter, allegedly supplied Shader, 27, with paint cans, glass bottles, marijuana, and gas money for her journey to New York City to, quote, cause hell, unquote. Authorities found a note with Ammerman's fingerprints in Shader's car. He later admitted to supplying Shader with the, quote, projectiles to throw at police and counter-protesters, unquote, according to the federal complaint. Read more about this story at MidHudsonNews.com. Sarah Trafton is reporting for Columbia Green Media that Greene County Administrator Sean Grodin, July 1st, presented to the full legislature a proposed policy for county employees planning to take out-of-state trips. The proposed policy would require a Greene County employee traveling to a state designated by New York as high risk for COVID-19 for leisure or any other non-work-related reason. The required 14-day self-quarantine time must come from the employee's vacation for personal days. quote, a one-week vacation could become 3 weeks without that employee, unquote, Legislator Chairperson Patrick Linger said. Legislator William Lawrence from Cairo asked how testing results affect the quarantine requirement. Lawrence asked, quote, if upon their return they are negative for the virus, does it override the governor's 14-day quarantine, unquote? Gordon said the quarantine would still be in effect regardless of the test result, but the requirements are different for essential workers. Some employees may face situations where they lack the vacation or personal days to cover the quarantine, Gordon said. As of last week, the states affected by the travel mandate include California, Georgia, Iowa, Idaho, Louisiana, Mississippi, Nevada, Tennessee, Alabama, Arkansas, Arizona, Florida, North Carolina, South Carolina, Utah, and Texas. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Sarah Trafton is reporting for Columbia Green Media that Democrat Betsy Kratt has declared her intention to challenge Republican incumbent Chris Tagg for the 102nd Assembly District seat. 100 resident Kratt is a single mother and a social worker by profession. Quote, I decided to run because there needed to be somebody to run against Chris Tagg, unquote, Kratt said. Quote, we were getting close to the cutoff for petitioning, and I decided that as a single mother, tenant, and social worker, I could bring a lot of unrepresentative viewpoints to the legislature, unquote. Healthcare is one of Kratt's top issues. Quote, the time has come that we really need to take a look at public health option, unquote, Kratt said. Quote, COVID has illustrated how private health care is a hindrance and not a help. It kept us from mounting a solid testing approach, unquote. Education is another area of interest for Kratt, arguing that public schools must be fully funded. She also wants to see police officers out of the schools. Kratt is also looking for the 102nd District to benefit from revenue generated by recreational marijuana, if it is legalized by the state, to give farmers an economic boost. Kratt said Tagg is an ineffective representative because, as a member of the minority, all he does is vote no. Quote, he can't really do much and hasn't taken the initiative to do much. We need somebody who can advocate for the people and make things happen, unquote, she said. The general election is Tuesday, November 3rd. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com and more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org. The National Weather Service in Albany predicts a sunny Sunday with a high of 87 and a low around 62. Monday should also be mostly sunny with a high of 82 and a low around 59. And then Tuesday, there's a 30% chance of scattered showers and thunderstorms, mainly after 5 p.m. Otherwise, it'll be partly sunny with a high near 83 and a low around 63. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, radio for open ears.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Scout of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
This is WA3QIZ. Do you read me?
Seymour, isn't it about time you made a real friend?
Mother, please, I'm communicating with my fellow hams.
How do I talk? Push this button here. You're all losers!
watching. Redemption, yeah.
Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Amelia. I'm a student. I'm not anymore, but I'm a graduate of Hudson High School. I'm also from Hudson.
Hi, I'm AJ. I used to go to school at Leibri, and I live in Elizaville.
I used to go to school at MC Smith, and I'm going into fifth grade. Yay!
And we're here every week talking about books.
Books we love, books we hate, bookish things.
All that good stuff. And yeah, so congratulations to y'all on finishing up your years, and especially to Amelia, who graduated last Friday.
Yay!
I got to watch the live stream. And the timing was perfect because I started watching the live stream and then some maintenance workers showed up to do some work that I had to meet with. And I was like, oh no, I'm going to miss it. And then I heard Amelia Ortiz and I got to see you graduate. And then I went and worked with those guys and I was so worried the whole time that I was going to miss Mashuda, our other co-host who graduated. But when I got back, she hadn't graduated yet because she was in one of the last groups. Mm-hmm. So I got to see both of you walk across the stage and get your diplomas. That was very nice.
Yeah.
Yay. Yeah, thumbs up from Lena. But anyways, does anyone have any books or bookish things they want to talk about this week?
Anyone? Someone pick someone.
Anyone. How about AJ?
Well, I do have some books. I reread the second book of the Narnia series.
Which one's that?
Lion, Witch, and Wardrobe, which is, I think, by far one of the most famous books in the world. Not the rest of them, but just that one for some reason, maybe because of the whole closet thing.
Because the movies.
And I thought it was interesting. This has nothing to do with the other story. But in a book that I read about, like, the Neverland, it's sort of similar because at the Spoiler alert. At the end of the book when they came back and it was the same scene as before, that sort of reminded me of Neverland in a different book that I read because, well, not in Peter Pan, but a different book that I read. And because when they left the Neverland, it was in the same time that it was before, nothing changed, which I thought was pretty cool. There's this sort of like science behind all this. I wonder. And also another book, yet another book that I read. It was Diary of a Wimpy Kid Wrecking Ball. And he was like, I'm pretty sure that the person at the back of the closet was pretty upset with me throwing in all my junk. And I just thought that was like pretty funny in the story. And so, yeah, that's what I read this week.
Have you read the other books in either of those series?
I don't have the first one, but I have the second through fifth, I think.
Of the Narnia ones? Have you read the other Wimpy Kid books before? Or is this your first Wimpy Kid?
I've read others.
So I think some of our listeners that are your age especially, or that are parents with kids your age, will know what the Wimpy Kid books are. But for those who don't, can you tell the listeners a little bit about them, about the series?
So there's this boy named Greg, and he writes about his silly life adventures. And it's like, so there was this problem that I had, and then he makes it sort of funny in a book. And the author is Jeff Kinney. And I read most of them at the library when Mom was trying to get me to read other books. And then, sorry, Mom. And I read Wimpy Kid after the other books. I was like, look at the page. Oh, no, I have to switch. He's coming. Okay, now I'm reading the other book again. So, sorry, Mom.
Those are very popular books, the Wimpy Kid ones. And I've only read the first one, but it was really fun. I get the appeal of it. It was funny and entertaining.
Did you read the newest one by Jeff Kinney? The one that Rolly wrote?
Rolly
is his best friend. I read it. It's very funny.
Cool. How about Lena? Do you have any books you wanted to talk about or bookish things?
I didn't really get to read a book this week at all because I was pretty busy because I had to go outside and stuff. But I did get to see a couple shows and movies that I've been wanting to see. The movie is Steven Universe, the movie. And the show that I got to see was, what's it called? Steven Universe Future. I'm not done with that one yet. And then I only got to see half of Danganronpa, I think is called, or well, pronounced. I don't really know how to pronounce it.
Danganronpa is how you pronounce it.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Amelia. That's what I did most of the week, kind of.
Can you tell us what Steven Universe is about?
Steven Universe is about a boy who is half gem, half human. And he gets to fight corrupted gems. And, he gets to fight them and bubble them and stuff.
It's such a cute show. I love this show so much. I have an art book for it, and it's the best thing I have.
Yeah, I've heard good things about that show. I know it's a very popular animation, especially with kids, but I think also with adults.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'd like to see it sometime. And it also has some books that go along with it, including the art book that Amelia mentioned, but it looks like there's some storybooks too. Maybe graphic novels.
I think there are graphic novels, but I haven't read any of those. I need to sometime. Yeah.
So actually, before I even got to even see Steven Universe, I had a postcard thing that was Steven Universe themed, and it was like postcard power or something. And I was like, what is this? Who is this? Why is this? And then when I finally watched it, I loved the show. Also, I'm kind of sad because I heard Steven Universe Future is probably like the ending to the series.
It is the ending.
No.
I know. I was sad. I don't know how much I liked the ending. I don't know if they pulled it off well, but eh.
Well, maybe the creators of that will now have free time to come up with the next best amazing show.
Yeah.
They can think about it that way.
Yeah.
But like, time. But I hear you. It's hard when things end that you don't want to end. And especially when they end in a way that you don't like as much.
Yeah.
So far in the show, I've only watched like few episodes. I think the show was like,
oh, we lost Jelena.
Rushed or something.
Can you say that again? It cut out for a bit. You said the show
seemed rushed.
I think that's what you're
saying. And in the beginning, it does seem rushed, but it gets a lot better. It's one of the shows you really have to get through the first season with.
Yeah,
then it kicks up a bit.
Yeah, but like the seems rushed. And like personally, I think the show seems rushed because like don't know why, but like makes me think that Steven has depression because like he's so depressing now.
You're watching Future now, right?
Yeah.
Future did seem rushed, but it did tackle issues like that, and I kind of loved that. But they kind of rushed into the subject and then rushed out of it way too quickly, which was strange to me. But yeah, first season and ending kind of aren't that good, but right in the center are the best episodes, in my opinion.
Okay. And I'll have to wait.
Yeah.
Well, I'm done talking now.
So, Amelia, do you have anything that you wanted to talk about?
I had a goal to finish the second book of that series I'm reading this week, but then I didn't touch it for the entire week. I don't know what I was doing, but it wasn't that. But I'm going to start reading the second book in that horror series, which will be fun. Mm-hmm. I can't wait.
So I have a question for you since you just graduated. Mm-hmm. Looking back on your many years in the Hudson City School District, what are the best books that you were assigned to read?
I liked Fried Green Tomatoes and Flowers for Algernon in freshman year. I liked, what did I read in sophomore year? It's kind of a blur. I think I just liked Othello during sophomore year because I had a part in that and because one of the characters had my exact name. I think I just enjoyed that. I enjoyed junior year. What did I do in junior year? maybe I didn't. I don't remember what I did in junior year. I think we read To Kill a Mockingbird and some other stuff in junior year. Oh! The Great Gatsby! How could I forget? I read The Great Gatsby in junior year, and I loved it. Absolutely loved it. I still love it. And this year, I don't even know how to choose, because all the books are kind of great, but my most favorite was probably The Book Thief.
And I saw you picked a Book Thief quote for your cap decoration.
Yes, I did.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Very exciting. So how are you feeling as a new graduate? Are you feeling ready for summer?
I feel kind of the same. I don't know. I feel kind of the same.
That's fair. You are kind of the same.
Yeah.
But you can't introduce yourself as a Hudson High School student anymore. That's the main difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have a big success finishing school. It's exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is exciting.
Well, I have a book I could talk about. I read this past week a book called King and the Dragonflies by Kasen Callender that has a beautiful cover, which our radio listeners cannot see, but the people I'm talking with can. So this is a middle grade novel about a character named King, or his full name is Kingston, but he goes by King for short. And the reason behind the title King and the Dragonflies is that King's brother Khalid, his older brother, had recently passed away quite unexpectedly and suddenly. And King is convinced that his brother has become a dragonfly, that he's shed his old skin like a snake would shed his skin and is now like inhabiting a dragonfly. So he spends a lot of time down in the bayou talking with his brother. So he's dealing with that loss and his family, kind of the changes with his family, with the loss of Khalid, as well as the grief that comes along with that. And then at the same time, one of his friends or his former friends goes missing. And his friend is his former friend because his brother Khalid had overheard his friend Sandy mentioning to King that he thought he liked boys. And Khalid had told King that he shouldn't be friends with him anymore because then everybody else is going to think that King is also gay. So he took the advice of his brother and told Sandy that he couldn't be friends anymore. But then Sandy goes missing and he's really worried about him and is trying to help find him and eventually does find him in a tent in King's backyard and decides to keep him hidden because he's run away from home.
Hmm.
And so there's a lot about family and friendship, and it's a really nice book. It's really beautifully written. I listened to this one on an audio recording during a long drive, and it was very nice. Yeah. Highly suggested. I feel like I've been really busy with work in the past month, and so haven't been reading at quite the pace that I have been recently. So it was really nice having this long ride to really like dive into a book and listen. You know, I, between the two legs of my trip, I was able to get the whole book in. And it was really nice to dive in that way, and especially into a book that's so good.
It sounds good.
Yeah. And I'm excited. Case and Calendar also has a teen book that just came out that sounded really good that I'm looking forward to reading. But I'm going to read a couple more first before diving into the same author again. But very nice book. And the audio was great. So before we go, I wanted to let you all know about a summer reading challenge that we're doing at the library that I think will be very fun. I'm excited about it. I'm planning to participate. So the theme for our summer reading program this year is Imagine Our Stories. And as part of that, we're looking at sort of folktales and mythologies and stories from all around the world and from different cultures all around the world. And we're encouraging people of all ages over the summer to read books set in diverse places around the world and then to share them with the library. And we're going to have a shared Google map where we'll sort of track where we collectively as a community have been reading books set in. So if you read a book set in South Africa, you can put a little pin on the map and put the book title and the author to chart that you've read a book there. Or if you read a book set in a small town in Louisiana, which is where King and the Dragonflies was set, you could mark that on the map. We don't have a map for fictional locations. So
How sad.
But we totally encourage people to read those books as well. We just don't have a way to track those.
Even though it's not very bookish or book-like, mm-hmm. I have some exciting news. If I told you, Emily, but I'm very lucky because I got in contact with my family because I'm adopted as a very early viewer. And finally got in contact with both sides of my family. And I used to be only in contact with one and one out of 1 million adopted kids in the world get to do it. Let alone
that's cool.
Let alone both sides.
That's great. Congrats.
Yeah, that's really nice.
I can call him up now on the radio show.
No, not do that.
All that you guys would hear is a bunch of static.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is why I probably shouldn't do it.
Yeah.
But maybe next time you talk with them, you can ask them what books they liked reading as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can report back on the radio.
Okay.
But yeah, so if you are interested in participating in the summer reading Read Around the World challenge that we're doing,
I am.
You can go to hudsonarealibrary.org/SRP for summer reading program, or you can find it through our home site as well if you don't remember the SRP part, but hudsonarealibrary.org/SRP, and look for Read Around the World and you can see how many cities, states, countries, continents we can visit this summer through stories, especially since our travel potential is limited this summer. Got to travel through some stories.
Yeah.
But yeah, thanks to everyone for listening. Congrats again to Amelia and Mashuda on their graduations and everyone else who finished up their school years or school careers this month. We hope everyone out there has a great week and reads lots of great books. Happy reading.
Passeio na livre dimensão, desgeografada de demarcação. Continentada em minhas regras, meu corpo, meu rolê. Fui numa andada à procura de ti.
Totalmente carregado, eu tava charge.
Little Abigail and the Beautiful Pony. There was a girl named Abigail who was taking a drive through the country with her parents when she spied a beautiful, sad-eyed, gray and white pony. And next to it was a sign that says, "For sale, cheap." "Oh," said Abigail, "may I have that pony? May I please?" And her parents said, "No, you may not." And Abigail said, "Oh, but I must have that pony." And her parents said, "Well, you can't have that pony, but you can have a nice butter pecan ice cream cone when we get home." And Abigail said, "I don't want a butter pecan ice cream cone. I want that pony. I must have that pony." And her parents said, "Be quiet and stop nagging. You're not getting that pony." And Abigail began to cry and said, "If I don't get that pony, I'll die." And her parents said, "You won't die. No child ever died yet from not getting a pony." And Abigail felt so bad that when they got home, she went to bed and she couldn't eat and she couldn't sleep. And her heart was broken and she did die, all because of a pony that her parents wouldn't buy. And this is a very good story to read to your parents when they won't give you something you want.
Hello and welcome to the Thingularity Radio Program, broadcasting live from points all across Greene County. So please bear with us, folks, tonight as the storm passes overhead. If we happen to lose some sort of communication, we are at the mercy of the weather. And now, the members of the Catskill Maker Syndicate and our guest, can everybody sound off? Start with Brendan. How are you?
Good. How are you doing, Jeff?
Who are you and what do you do?
I'm Brendan. Most people know me as Bren. I'm an assistant professor at UAlbany and part of the Purpose Co-working and Makerspace, and it's sort of a surrogate recently adopted member of the syndicate.
Awesome. Albert, you checking in?
Yep, this is Albert here, checking in.
Okay, Jill, you there?
I am here with
Corey McFarlane, Seth and Todd's little brother.
Excellent. And Cody, last check-in. How you doing?
Hello, hello. Coming to you from the basement of the humble yet magnificent treehouse in Cairo, New York. Former home of Ree Brickhouse.
Okay, sounds like another cellar-dwelling wirehead. And I am your cool, calm, collected, counterculture collaborator that is caffeinated and COVID-free, Mr. Conductor. Okay, Brendan is our guest tonight. Why do we have you here, and what do you do?
I think I'm here. Cody invited me to come on the show, and we're going to talk a little bit about the face shields that we were making for CMH and other essential workers in the area.
Cool. That's good work. I hear it's been well received by the people that have been working there.
Yeah, we cranked them out. We got a 500. Like, it wasn't just Cody and I. There's a much bigger team involved in this, but we ended up making 500 for CMH, and that was enough for them. And then we started turning to like nursing homes in the area, as well as ARC. And other essential workers, we were just kind of like reaching out, like who needs them, and then every week we'd kind of distribute them for the last 3 months or so.
How did you hear about the Maker Syndicate?
We got connected to the Maker Syndicate through Jessica at Nervous System, and I think Liam Singer also put out feelers as well, but we were kind of like putting out word. We knew we needed more people involved and printing if we were going to have any chance of meeting such a large capacity. And so through those places, we got connected. We had heard there was a 3D printer in the space, and then eventually got connected to Cody and started like churning them out.
It was a long struggle, wasn't it? The first few weeks was just like things breaking over and over again.
So many things breaking, so much creative problem solving. Someone in our group was like kind of just exhausted, and they're like, I feel like we're trying to put the man on the moon, just because there was so little sleep, so much caffeine, and I was just constantly trying to troubleshoot with limited resources.
Sounds like standard COVID fare.
Yeah, seriously.
Well, it was for a good cause, so kind of kept me going. The long nights.
Well, that was rad.
Designing various iterations on different models, seeing what I could tweak to make our machines, the Maker Syndicate machines, print more reliably.
Yeah, what are you guys printing exactly? Why don't you explain what it is that you're making?
Well, specifically coming out of our space, our studio.
Yeah, is it the ear guards or like the ear saver?
No. It was the visors, like the shields that go in front of your face, in front of your mask, and stop a lot of particulates from reaching you. And we were doing the solid parts, like the headbands and some reinforcement pieces.
Okay.
Yeah, so the face shields are kind of like the splash guards for, you know, directly in-your-face exposure. And there are four components involved in making a face shield. Two of them can be 3D printed. And it takes it's the longest part of the process to make. So Cody was instrumental in kind of like reducing the print time, like making designs that were more efficient for those pieces that we could print faster and then keep up with making the plastic visors and the stretchy headbands in the back.
What was the component that couldn't be manufactured?
So basically the clear plastic shield that goes in the front, the 3D printed part is kind of a headband that rests on the forehead, and then a chin piece that is attached to the bottom of the clear plastic visor. And so the clear plastic visor, we were trying to find a source of like acetate in the area that we could use, because it was drying up all over the place online. It was really hard to acquire that. And one of the members on our team, an artist named Amelia Tolkey, who teaches like some metal classes at SUNY New Paltz, she came up with the idea of, well, could we use the laminate sheets in the local library system and then just laminate the sheets but without anything inside them? So you make a thicker, clear piece of plastic. And then her and her partner, Anthony Irwin, used a plotter to cut those to like the specifications that we needed.
That's spectacular. That's the kind of innovation I like hearing around here.
Oh, dude, it was crazy. So in order to like get the numbers that we needed, we more or less exhausted the laminate sheet inventory in the local library systems across Columbia and Greene County. So Sue Ray in Catskill Library, she blasted all the librarians in Greene County. And then the librarian in Chatham, what's her name? Lisa DeLisi, I believe that's right. She blasted all the librarians in Columbia County. Oh yeah, Julie DeLisi. And through that, we were able to like harvest the stock and get it laminated and then get it cut. And then the last piece was the kind of flexible band in the back that holds it, makes it adjustable and keeps it on people's heads securely and comfortably. A lot of the sewing groups had exhausted the elastic supply in the area, so it was really hard to get elastic at that time. And we eventually were able to troubleshoot it and use disposable blood straps, like tourniquet straps that you'd normally put around your arm to like draw blood. We were able to secure like large supplies of those, and then we just kind of cut them to size and attach them. So yeah, it was definitely like a kludgy collective effort to like get the whole thing designed and built.
I have one question. Currently in New York State, we're doing magnificently as far as COVID is concerned. Our numbers are going down and they're staying that way. However, everywhere else, lots of other parts of the country, we're seeing numbers start to spike again, and we're starting to worry about shortages happening again. Now, if things start to hit the fan again here in New York, is there a place that people can contact you to donate any sort of resources that they might find helpful?
At this point, so Liam Singer kind of led the fundraising effort, and he helped us, and the broader community in the area definitely stepped up, and we were able to get $5,000 to like secure additional supplies, and we didn't charge any of the people we were donating to, and so we have exhausted that, and there isn't like a donate link that's currently up. Basically, where things are at with the supplies and the operation is, in the beginning, like there wasn't really any major manufacturers or companies that were set up to do this, which is why you saw local maker spaces here in the area, as well as elsewhere, kind of step up and fill in that gap. Right now, it's a question of, like, can the larger manufacturers, now that they've switched over, so, like, you know, Nike, even Ford Motor Company is making face shields now. So if can they keep up with the demand? Right now, they seem to be able to do that. It's a question of, like, in a few months, if it continues to grow, will they, you know, be able to keep pace? And so we're kind of keeping an eye and monitoring that situation. So right now, like, we can't, because we're smaller scale, we can't make face shields at cost more cheaply than the larger manufacturers. But that could, that equation could change in a few months. So we're kind of just keeping our eyes open. And if we do have to fire up these engines again and start, like, raising resources, I will definitely reach out to you guys to help get the word out. But as of right now, we're just kind of, you know, monitoring the situation with the larger manufacturers producing at this point.
That is great news.
Okay. If there is somebody who wants to contact us about this, you can probably email, what is it?
Catskillmakersinfo@gmail.com. Once again, that is catskillmakersinfo@gmail.com.
Our guest this morning, Monica Byrne. Good morning, Monica.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
No problem. And I had talked about some of the things, well, one of the things that you do, you're a board member of the Hudson Business Coalition. You've been on the air before. We've talked about this. Right now, you're working with several small business owners in Hudson over the shared street program that happened this weekend. Folks, if you'd like to see, if you haven't read about the shared street program, you can go to cityofhudson.org and you can read about it as we talk about it. Well, let's step back to this weekend, Monica. From your perch during the weekend, how would you say the program proceeded?
Well, I mean, first I want to say that the program itself is a wonderful idea. And it was put together really, really quickly by a group of people in Hudson who have just worked really, really hard to make something happen. So I want to say that first and foremost. That said, you know, the devil is always in the details. And in negotiations with the city, there were certain things that became requirements, like the fees that businesses had to pay for the space out front and the curfew on time for service for restaurants and things like that, that became impediments for a lot of small businesses to participate. That, combined with the fact that it was a rainy weekend, meant that it wasn't necessarily the smoothest starting of the program. Mm-hmm. But we have high hopes that we can iron out these bumps and that it can become a really great way to reopen Hudson while it's safe and smart and open air and spacious and people can start to feel comfortable gathering in small groups again.
Yeah. I just want to also say, folks, if you're going to cityofhudson.org, you will find information about shared streets on the mayor's office. And let me just read what the goal is of shared, well, they call it shared summer streets. The program right. is to begin a process of opening up Warren Street to businesses, residents, and visitors to practice safe physical distancing. Which, and I agree with you, I do think it's a good idea. As a board member of the Hudson Business Coalition, what has been the feedback? What have you heard from local businesses and people who were on Warren Street this past weekend?
It's been mixed. I mean, as I said, participation was limited, and to be fair all around, a lot of that had to do with the weather as much as anything else.
Right.
This weekend, because it was a trial run, the city did not charge any fees for participation. So there were a few places that participated, like Supernatural Coffee. They had wonderful setup, and it looked like it worked really well, and it looked like a nice way to have that sitting at a cafe experience but still have enough safe space around you. But there were a lot of other places that just didn't choose to participate or maybe put seating on the sidewalk rather than in the street. I think if we're able to iron out the fees, and just to be clear about it, I think we had initially thought we were going to pay a permit fee for the summer, but instead it's a fee per parking space per week. So even for a very small business like mine, where we take two spaces, it would add about $200 a month to our rent. And normally that might not be a big deal, but coming out of the end of this crisis, right, having had 4 months of not being able to pay our rent, catching up with that and then adding more to it is just not workable. So that's a challenge. And then there was feedback about traffic. You know, some people would love to see the streets completely closed. Mm-hmm. Others think that there's block off any traffic and want to have access for cars to do drop-offs and deliveries and curbside pickup. So there's some mixed feelings on those things. There's always a handful of people who are concerned with parking, although, mm-hmm, to be frank, the study identified well over 500 parking spaces that are immediately in the vicinity of Warren to replace anyone that gets lost. Mm-hmm. So while that, again, might normally be a concern, I think it's important that people view this through the prism of disaster recovery aid, and that we're trying to do this in a wonderful, celebratory manner, but that it is recovery aid. It's not just, let's open up the streets and become a European city for fun. It's really to do business in a safe, healthy way, which means being in the open air.
Yeah.
So we're all going to have to make some compromises in order to make that work.
Mm-hmm. As I've read and as I understand it, they wanted about $24 per space, two for each business. So in a year, that's roughly about $192.
No. It's $24 a space.
A space.
Per week.
Per week. Okay.
And the average business would have two spaces. Some would have, you know, my storefront would be about two spaces wide. Another local restaurant, their space would have been about five to six spaces wide. And so for my business, it would be $200 a month extra.
Ooh, that's steep. Okay.
Yeah. That's the thing. Yeah. We initially thought that it was going to be just a one-time permit fee for the season, which would have been fine.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But this is just too expensive. Because in addition, the small businesses, especially the restaurants, and I think there's something that people may not realize about restaurants because you see them busy. You see a lot of cash coming in and going out. Most restaurants, when they're successfully run on a 10% or less margin, which means 90% of the money that they make goes right back out into the community. And it's very tight. So if anything cuts into those margins, it becomes much less. Right now, we're going to have to do reduced capacity, you know, at least 50%, if not smaller. Most of us are focusing on outdoor dining because indoor doesn't feel safe, even if the governor says it's safe. And then we're going to have new expenses because we're going to buy outdoor furniture and plants to do streetscaping and umbrellas and things like that. A lot of things that some of us have already invested in. So that added with the additional rent becomes something really challenging. And then you add to that an 8:30 curfew, which was originally going to be 10. A restaurant has to look hard at how much they're spending and how much work they're going to have to invest. And will they even break even with those numbers? And right now, we're not sure of that.
Yeah.
I'm confident if we can shift a few of these things that we can make it work. But right now, that's a stumbling block for a lot of the businesses, but definitely the restaurants.
Yeah. In your opinion, you know, we're talking about pedestrians and traffic. Do you feel that there was enough signage?
I think, and I want to be fair, people put it together very fast and they work very hard. I think for a permanent basis, we need better signage. We need larger signage. Probably at least for the first few weeks, we could probably use more volunteers, mm-hmm, to help direct traffic and answer questions so that people are clear. I think that there were a few instances that I've heard of confusion going to cars going in the same direction or facing one another, that sort of thing. So I think that we can definitely tighten those details up, but it's all within the scope of what's workable and fixable, I think.
Right. Again, Monica, in your opinion, Do you feel that the program was well publicized? Meaning, did the word get out fast enough to different media sources and different, you know, the different Chamber of Commerces and, you know, so people not just in Hudson knew that this was happening, but, you know, other communities that come into Hudson, in your opinion?
Well, of course, I'm definitely speaking from just my opinion.
Yes.
There are two prongs to that. The first answer is no, and that is because this was put together very fast in a matter of weeks. And once the plan was put together, the people planning at Hudson Hall and Peter Spear of One Hudson had to then go to the city and negotiate with them. And getting those terms agreed to, finding the legal ways to make it possible, all of that stuff took a lot of time. So the program, as it existed last weekend, wasn't finalized until literally a few days beforehand. So being able to share that widely without the details being finalized was a challenge. And so I think that was another issue with business participating, because finding out what we needed to do on Wednesday in order to participate on Friday just was too tight for most of us. That said, now they've done the trial. We've written letters. They've gotten feedback from a couple of surveys. They're going to take that information and hopefully hone some of these things and come back with a more solid plan. And if the city commits to it for the rest of the season, then we can do a more solid job of promoting it and sharing it and also creating the infrastructure to support it. On the other hand, one of the really key things and we want to be clear, Hudson wants to distinguish itself from many of the cities around the country that you're hearing about that are like, oh, yay, we're open for business, and people suddenly crowds descending and people being reckless and not safe. We are not, we want people to start coming out, but we are not trying to make Hudson have its record-breaking tourist season this summer. We want people to come out, but we want people to come out slowly, smartly, safely. So we don't necessarily want the streets crowded. We don't want risky behavior. We want our community, first and foremost, to feel safe, and then our visitors also to feel safe. And we want to protect our staff and all the people working. So we want to publicize it, but we also want to be smart about it. We're not trying to create a situation that'll encourage any risk for anybody.
Folks, my guest here on WGXC is Monica Byrne. Among other things, she's the creative director of Homemade Hudson and Atelier Roquette right here in Hudson, and also a board member of the Hudson Business Coalition. And we are talking about what happened this past weekend, the Shared Summer Street Program. Monica, you and other Hudson small businesses have composed a letter to Hudson Mayor Kamal Johnson about the program. Are there things in it that you can share with us, some of the critiques and suggestions that you have for him?
Sure. I mean, several of them I've actually